As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On the beach, the only place to read your emails and your tweets. It's Friday, October 23rd. Thanks for checking out the No Dunks podcast here on the Athletic Network. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me, as always, we got Tass Mellis.
Hey, everybody. Great to hear from you again.
Hey, Tassie. We got the international man of mystery taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friend.
Lee. And last but not least, making this magic happen, is J.D.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are, the bearded one, Trey Kirby, still off camping with the family. I actually texted him last night to ask how many fish he had caught. And sadly, I have to report, at least last night, nothing. Only bite came off, Lele. That was the only one he had. But he says, and I'm quoting him here, there's bass in that lake.
Well, is there, though?
Well,
is there?
I mean, he believes. He believes. Got to have some faith. So good luck to Trey Kirby. He will be back for sure next week for a couple of our podcasts. Thanks again to everybody for sending in their questions over the last couple of days or over the last week. Keep them coming. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com, or you can tweet them in at nodunksinc. We have another great batch of questions tasked. But before we do, I had some coaching news that we could just quickly slip in here. I'll just lump them together and you can go wherever you want with it. The Pelicans hired Stan Van Gundy and his Twitter account as their next head coach. And the Pacers hired Raptors assistant Nate Bjorkgren as next head coach. So from Nate to Nate there in Indiana, but the Pelicans hiring the notorious SVG, I think, is maybe the bigger news to a lot of, at least casual fans, probably knowing that name. What do you think?
Well, he is a great coach, and we are going to miss him on the tweets. He was a fantastic Twitter follower. He says he's going to continue with the tweets. At the same time, he is going to tone it down, and he said he is representing an organization now, so things are going to be a little different on the Twitter. But yeah, it's going to make a difference in our lives. No tweets, no stand on the broadcast, no stand on NBA TV. Listen, when you watch him or listen to him on any basketball program, you know the guy is extremely thorough in everything he does and extremely knowledgeable. He's not going to be outworked. And that's what all of his players have said throughout the years. Great reviews. He's also known for establishing a great defense. And that's exactly what he needs to do in New Orleans. That's his primary job. We saw what happened in the bubble. They just kind of fell apart. He told Zach Lowe in July, I think their personnel is good enough defensively, as transcribed there by Dan Devine. And maybe that got him the job. Maybe David Griffin was listening to the Zach Lowe podcast and said, this is perfect. After what happened to Alvin Gentry in the bubble there, his team just, it didn't show up. It really didn't. With you know, Zion in and out of the bubble may have been an issue and having to deal with his minutes. But the fact is they weren't working hard. You got guys like Jrue Holiday, Lonzo Ball to really contribute on that end. Brandon Ingram, can Stan Van get something out of him? And is Derek Favors going to come back? I'm interested in that because I want to see Zion Williamson at the five just purely from a fan standpoint. And I think Stan Van is inventive enough or was just curious to see that enough. So he'll try that out. But I think that what it comes down to is those names, Zion Williamson on the defensive end, Sam Van Gundy with Blake Griffin most recently in Detroit, Dwight Howard back in Orlando. He will get on, guys. And I think that's what it's about. It's about accountability. It's about superstars being held to their highest level. And Stan Van is going to do that. So there is definitely hope after an up and down 5 years for Alvin Gentry. I think Stan Van is a good choice for sure to try and get them to play hard on that end. I mean, that's what it really comes down to is have a program. Superstars got to work. And I think SVG can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Pelicans were 21st in the NBA last regular season when it came to defensive efficiency. So below averagely, you know, you're going to hope to get that at least above average or average. Do you think this hire, though, SVG in New Orleans, do you think it makes it less likely, more likely that a guy like Holiday stays there, maybe even Redick, both of those guys, unrestricted free agencies after the season? Will those guys still be on the trade market? It favors, you know, Tass mentioned as well. Like, I wonder with him coming in there, especially Holiday as the best of the bunch there. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just about their timeline, really. He's got some history with JJ Redick, Stan Van in Orlando, so he might want to have his veteran presence on the roster there. But if you're JJ Redick, you probably look at this roster and think we're not competing for a championship in the next season or two when he's, you know, he's probably only got a couple of years left in the league. So he may want to go on, but I wouldn't be surprised if Stan's like, listen, I just want you around to help out, help sort of coach these younger guys. As for Drew Holiday, I mean, we know he's a great player. We know he's a great defensive player. But again, is he sort of looking right now and thinking, if I'm going to win a championship, it's not going to be here in New Orleans, because it's not going to happen for the next two or three seasons, at least, no matter how well Zion Williams develops. So I think Drew Holiday probably wants to move on and probably wants to go to a team that's a little bit closer to contending. But of course, it comes back down to them. What can they get in return for him? What sort of package do the Pelicans want? Do they want younger guys? Do they want picks? Do they want assets, to build for the future here with Zion? Because clearly Zion is the key. And they have to get the right players around him, but they also have to get pieces that fit around him. And the big question, of course, is Brandon Ingram. Is that a long-term fit there together? But in aside from that, they have to get pieces that are going to sort of be able to grow with Zion and sort of reach their peak at the same time. So that's going to be the question. I think you get something good in return for Drew Holiday. So I think he's got some value. It's just whether or not the Pelicans want to have some veterans around, or do they want to just sort of basically blow it up and start now building around Zion.
Yeah, this is what's interesting about the SVG hire. It says to me, hey, we want to win now. I mean, this is not like a Nate Bjorkgren or like some, you know, unnamed assistant that we don't know of. And it's like, okay, he'll come in and, you know, we'll look 4 or 5 years in the future. And obviously that Zion as our centerpiece and we will be a contending team down the road. This team, you get Sam Van Gundy. You're saying to me, at least, no, we want to win now. No, I'm not saying title, but we want to get in the playoffs. We want to be, you know, a contender of some sort. So that's fascinating. And then, yeah, how much does that play with keeping Drew Holiday or not? How many picks can you get for Drew Holiday? You know, are you looking at like what Conley got in his return? You know, that type of thing. So, yeah, a lot of questions here. I'm excited that I'm with you, Tass. It sucks that he won't be on the call because he's one of the best. I do like that we have an NBA TV front office, though, now in David Griffin and Stan Van Gundy together. Feels like we're part of the team in a weird way. But, yeah, it's an interesting decision to, like, for me, again, I don't know if that's ownership from the Pelicans, if that's Griff himself, like, No, we want to win now. And we think we've got obviously some young talent here. And we'll see who stays and what we can get in return for some of these older guys, maybe. But yeah, we're going to go get some W's right now because Stan Van, that's what he's going to do. And he's hopefully going to make that defense better. You know, Dan Devine did have a great article. I thought I shared it on Twitter talking about Van Gundy teams. They control the defensive glass. They keep opponents off the line, keep them out of transition, which the Pelicans were brutal at. They take care of the ball for the most part. And they force the other team to shoot the shots that they don't want to take. It's pretty simple stuff, really. But that's what Stan Van, he tries to implement those, like, that the classic, don't kill yourself. Like, just don't make it easier for your opponent. So they should be better. They're instantly going to be better, I think, with Stan Van Gundy as their coach. But how much better in a loaded West? I mean, like, are the Pelicans to you, I know this is tough right now here in October, and we don't even know when the season's starting, but are they a playoff team? Like, are they a lock to make the playoffs?
They should be. That should be their expectation. I think so.
You think they're a lock?
No.
No, yeah, no.
But this is what hiring Stan Van Gundy is saying, you think?
Yeah, I think there's two extremes we saw in one season last year. The expectations fell off the table because Zion Williamson wasn't there. And then when we saw him come back, the expectations went through the roof. Mm-hmm. And if he's healthy, I think we're all in the boat where we're still kind of sour with what happened in the bubble, just as far as, you know, a fan base goes. But big picture, if David Griffin sits back and looks at what Zion did and what his team looked like on the offensive end for a good chunk of his minutes, he's got to be pumped. And so, yeah, you bring in Stan Van because you want to win right now. I think Jrue Holiday is there next year because Stan Van is a guy who wants Jrue Holiday on the floor big time. So I expect them to have the same type of team, and it would be a huge disappointment if Zion is healthy next year and they don't make the playoffs for them, because there's a lot to tinker with. And I think that's when Stan Van, when he was on Zach Lowe in July, he wasn't, you know, pining for the job back then. That was Alvin Gentry's job back then. But if you listen to that podcast, you can hear the gleam in Stan Van Gundy's eye. He is pumped to just talk about that roster, to talk about Jrue Holiday and Zion Williamson and what everybody was excited for last year. You know, when we're looking forward to game one, Zion is going to take the floor. And then he got injured, and it didn't happen until, you know, he hit four threes against the Spurs. I guess it was January when he came back. But I think they have enough talent. And we talk about defense. Zion Williamson, there's the highlight that is played constantly from his college days where he's in the lane and he goes out and blocks a shot in the corner with like a step and a half, like a Giannis-like step. He can be, if he's held accountable, a great defensive player as well. And they've got the offensive tools. You know, Brandon Ingram is a star. So I think their goals should definitely be the playoffs. And if they're healthy, they should definitely be disappointed if they don't make it. It's exciting. It feels like it's almost like, you know, whatever it was 12 months ago when everyone was pumped to see Zion on the floor.
Yeah, I think with Jrue Holiday too, the idea of trading him or not, I think it's totally up to him. I think if Jrue Holiday, I think he's so respected in this league, and I'm sure has a great relationship with the Pelicans, that if he said, like you were saying, Lee, if he was like, I want to go win a ring, you know, I don't think it's going to happen here in the next couple of years. You guys are set up maybe for the long term, but like, I want to go get that. I'm getting to that point in my career. I think they would, because he's obviously would be coming up to free agency, unrestricted free agency a year from now. I think they would honor that, and I think they would look to see what they could get for him. But I'm not so sure he would actually, I don't know, you know, Jrue Holiday doesn't seem like that type of guy to me either. Like, I have no idea. Like, maybe he was just like, no, this, you know, we got a new coach in here. Let's see what we can do. And maybe, like, Tass, I sort of split the difference here is you don't trade him this offseason, whatever the hell the offseason means anymore, but you wait until whenever the trade deadline is, right? And then, you know, you get the odd desperate team, and maybe the trade package coming back is a little juicier. Maybe there's an extra pick. Maybe there's another younger asset that's included. So, yeah. I sort of now think if I'm a betting guy, I don't think Jrue Holiday will be on a different team at the start of next season, though I still sort of have an idea that he will be traded around the trade deadline, because at that point, you know, who knows what your team has done up to that point, how many wins you have, are the Pelicans in a race, a playoff race, are they, have they shocked people and are like a fifth seed, who knows, but I sort of think he will be there now at the start of the year, and I think Redick as well. Favors is an interesting one, but we will see. Anything to add before we get to the questions with the Pacers hiring Raptors assistant Nate Bjorkgren? I believe I'm saying that right. You know, it's one of those ones that I think is not that difficult to say, but it looks crazy, right? But yeah, I mean, this was a little out of left field, Lee. You know, there's been a lot of big names being thrown around, you know, coaches that have coached before, and this guy gets his first shot here in Indiana. What do you think?
They're hoping to get Nick Nurse light, really, because he's been with Nick Nurse a long time. I think dating back 12 or 13 years when they first started coaching together, and he's going to try to adapt a lot of the principles that Nick Nurse has implemented there in Toronto. Three-pointers, move that ball, and you know what? If things aren't working, I'm going to try things. I'm going to try things differently. I'm going to try to improve the defense. He likes that opportunity, likes that team. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a flyer here for sure for the Pacers, because he's a relative unknown to most basketball fans, but I think they look at the success that Nick Nurse had and how he was able to communicate with players, and that's one of the things that Bjorkgren spoke about. He said, we've got to communicate, we've got to get everyone on the same page, and that's one thing that Nick Nurse has been very, very successful with. So if the Pacers can get a guy who's able to you know, communicate with his players and get the same sort of respect from them, then things should improve for the Pacers. I think this is a playoff team. It's just they've been this same sort of on the treadmill here for a couple of years now, where they make the playoffs, they're good enough to make the playoffs, you know, fifth seed, sixth seed, even higher, but that's, they can't really get any further than that. So the Pacers are hoping to turn a corner. They've got a few question marks, of course, with their roster, mm-hmm. as whether or not Oladipo stays, maybe Miles Turner. So that'll be some interesting things there for Indiana. But I think it's worth a shot. Why not? I think he's done his time, and they've seen success with Nick Nurse, and they think maybe Nate can have the same sort of impact on our team.
Anything to add, Tess?
No, it's just kind of hard to evaluate because you don't know what his roster is going to be. Mm-hmm. We don't know if Victor Oladipo is going to be there. I assume he's got the chutzpah of a Nick Nurse. Like, he's going to take some chances and try and get creative on the offensive end. But who the heck knows the Pacers roster next year? I mean, we really have no idea. And that leads us into our first question, unless you want to talk
no,
some,
let's do it.
Some Nate. Yeah, let's do it, because we got a hypothetical here. We got a who says no. I know you're excited, Lee. Hello, No Dunks. I love your podcast. I listen to you guys so much that I think of you all as friends. My question today is a who says no. The Warriors trade Andrew Wiggins and their 2020 second overall pick for the Pacers, TJ Warren and Miles Turner. I think the Warriors do it because they move on from Andrew Wiggins. They just got the guy. And in return, get back a solid third scoring option in TJ Warren and get a great defensive center in Miles Turner who can try and slow down Anthony Davis. I think the Pacers do it because they start a proper rebuild and get a solid young player in the second overall pick who they can build around. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome. That's from Morgan, our friend in Australia. Skeet, so what do you think of this? Warriors, Pacers, who says no deal?
I'll tell you who says no. The Pacers say no. The Warriors say absolutely yes. Instantaneously. Yes. Come on. Okay. First off, I couldn't believe that this actually checks out. Like, you can actually do this trade. You read it and you're like, how is that going to work, you know, financially? It does, because Wiggins makes a shit ton of money. You know, $29.5 million, still 3 years to go. The number two pick, you know, obviously rookie scale contract type thing, that's going to be close to $9 million. But then Warren, $11.7 million for 2 years. Turner, $17.5 million for 3 years. So basically adding those two gets you to Wiggins. So it does work. Here is why, though. I just think the Pacers say no. I'm glad we got to this, because you've seen a lot of these, like, the Warriors are going to trade the number two pick. What could they get back? Who could they get back? There is an overall lack of consensus surrounding the top available prospects in this draft. Now, I am not a draft expert, but that is clear. If this were to happen, there's no way it goes through without, I think, Golden State having to throw in another pick. They have to probably throw in the 2021 Minnesota pick from the D'Angelo Russell trade, which is protected top three in 2021 and then is unprotected. Now that gets a little more interesting to me, because you have the Pacers taking on the bigger, longer-term deal in Wiggins, who, by the way, of those three guys that we mentioned, is he the worst player?
Easily.
Yes, exactly. Well, so you'd okay. have to
I
be
think
getting...
I think we're super pumped about TJ Warren's run.
No,
here,
I'm not super pumped at all about TJ Warren.
Well, okay.
But he's right. Wiggins is not as good as a TJ Warren. I'd rather him on my team. At the contract he is, Tass... Basically,
well,
a third
okay.
what he makes.
Okay, well, you're throwing two things in there. Is he the best, better
well,
player?
It all goes
or
together.
Contract. I mean, is he going to be your small forward on a championship team? Like, are the Warriors going to say, "Hey, this guy's our starting small forward on our championship team"? TJ Warren.
Yeah. Well, TJ can play
a
little bit
with
four
Wiggins.
In this. Yeah, you are holding. I mean, Wiggins Island is completely yours now. But I almost respect it, but. I just don't think the Pacers do this without another pick being thrown in there, is my point. Because again, this draft is not like, you're not getting John Moran at number two here. You don't even know who you're going to get, because you don't know, first off, if Minnesota's keeping the number one pick and who they're taking, or if it's traded, who the hell the other team is taking. So who's left? You know, I mean, are you getting Ball? Are you getting Wiseman? Are you getting Edwards? Like, you don't really know. And all three of those guys, by the way, again, I'm not an expert when it comes to the draft, but no one's like, well, they're a 10-time All-Star. You know, they're a future All-NBA player. Like, people are not saying that by any means with a lot of these guys. So it's a huge unknown. So I just think in this scenario, and this is to our friend Morgan, this is an easy who says no, that the Pacers would say no. They would need more. There are packages for Wiggins and the number two pick and maybe another pick out there. I just don't think it's going to be as juicy as what I think is a pretty good return in TJ Warren and Miles Turner. Those are two really complimentary players, in my opinion, to Steph Curry, Clay, and Draymond. Lee, you agree or disagree?
No, I agree. I would, if I'm the Pacers, I would not want Andrew Wiggins coming back for giving up those two players. I mean, TJ Warren, I think, would actually be a nice fit on that team. If you've got Steph and Clay and Draymond out there, and am I forgetting someone? No, but then, and then TJ Warren just to shoot three-pointers in the corner, I think that's okay. That's what the Pacers, the Warriors would be looking for. They don't need someone else who's going to command a whole lot of the ball.
And, the Warriors would do this in a heartbeat, is
yeah,
the point.
Yeah, and okay, Miles... So- Yeah. And Miles Turner, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of his right now, but I think, again, in the right team and the right system, he could improve. But, yeah, that what you were saying there as well is about the draft. No one knows anything really about how deep this draft is, A, because we didn't see a lot of these guys play, and B, it's just not being hyped up. A lot of people have got, like, multiple different guys going in that one or two spot. So, yeah, if I'm the Pacers, you need way more than that in return if you're going to give up those two players. And if you're the Warriors, though, again, you're in a win-now mode. So a rookie coming onto that team, I'm not sure how much that fits anyway. So I think the Warriors are definitely looking to move and get some more veterans. So, yeah, I think they would do that as well. But
see, I agree with that. But my point is, usually the number two pick, wow, I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Because usually that means I'm getting a real damn good player. I think it's different this year. I think it's a bunch of unknowns. And it's like, it doesn't have as much value as it normally would at the number two spot. Mm. I think that's my point. So if I was, again, Indiana in this scenario... I'm just going to need more. I'm just going to need. I'm going to need another pick. I'm going to need that Minnesota pick. Throw it in. All right, top three protected 2021, and then unprotected. That's a little juicier because now you're looking at drafts down the line, and you're Indiana, and you're rebuilding, and all that, and you're moving guys anyway. So you would just ask for more. That's what I think, Tass. But you don't mind it.
Well, I think the Pacers would be inclined to say yes, just because they get that number two pick. It just a number two pick just doesn't come around very often. I know everybody doesn't know who is going 1, 2, 3, and there are teams that are thinking, well, maybe we can trade down from 2 to 8 and still get our guy because there's so many varying opinions. Right. But if you want to start a rebuild, like the Pacers sure seem like they do, if Victor Oladipo is going to go somewhere else, if he is not the star that they thought they had in 2018 when he was dueling LeBron in a 7-game series, well, then maybe you got to move on. And to get a number two pick, look up and down their roster. They don't have a high pick sitting on their bench. They just don't. So, yes, I understand that you may not get a star at the number two pick. But I think that starts the conversation for this trade because you may want to move on from TJ Warren when his value is ridiculously high here if you're going to start the rebuild. And Miles Turner, as solid as he's been, he hasn't really impressed to the level that everyone expected to. So I don't know. If I'm the Warriors, I try and get somebody else for the number two pick. Yeah, Miles Turner, you're going to have out there guarding Anthony Davis? I guess. But I don't know. There's big question marks on both sides when you look at this deal. And I know Andrew Wiggins is a question mark in and of himself, for sure. But they're going to give him a chance to guard some people on the wing. And Lee saying, you know, TJ Warren in the corner hanging out. Well, Andrew Wiggins hanging out and being a third option as well. And you know he can play defense. Will he? Who the heck knows? Who says no? Who says yes? It's a very difficult question.
How about this trade idea then? I saw SI.com threw this one out. Wiggins, the number two pick, and that Minnesota 2021 pick, because again, I think that's going to have to be included in a lot of these, to Atlanta, Lee, for Clint Capella and the number six pick. Warriors stay in the draft, obviously slide down a little bit, so they're going to be able to pick someone that you're going to have to. It'd be nice to have a cheap guy on our roster with obviously a bunch of money, and you get Clint Capella as your big to pair with all your shooters, a guy that you're going to then, you know, you're going to be, I guess, asked to try and guard the Anthony Davisons and stuff like that. What do you think of that one? Wiggins, number two pick, 2021 Minnesota pick for Capella and the number six pick.
Yeah, so you're getting two like high picks, basically, in exchange there for Capella and Wiggins. I think the Hawks would do that. I mean, because they're at a different place right now. The only question is, Trae Young, we know, was frustrated with front office last year where he was like, I need some players around me. I want to start winning. So would that upset him a little bit if you're like, okay, we're sort of stocking up again for next year's draft and we're getting another high draft pick, another guy to develop. So we're going to sort of, the timeline gets pushed back a little bit further. So they may be cautious of that. But in theory, otherwise, I think, yes, you do that if you're the Atlanta Hawks. Just accumulate those assets. Keep going until you're ready. Because you've got some good players there, some good potential. But someone like John Collins, I mean, how much better is he going to get? And is he a guy for the future? So maybe you can look to sort of maybe move him in a package. And if you've got another draft pick there, that's when you can sort of start to sweetened deals if you want to try to get another player. So that's how I think it works. I think if you're the Hawks, yes, you do that.
And then we would have Wiggins right here in our backyard.
Oh, man.
He'd be on the Hawks. Clint Capella would, he wouldn't even have played a game if this something like this went down for the Hawks. Wow. He didn't play for them, right? Yeah.
I don't remember.
No. I saw some footage of him and Trae Young looking at a whiteboard, looking over a play, and I thought, where the heck is that from? But I guess they hung out. And
right. He just never played, yeah.
Yeah, did a little work together, but... Yeah, they would move on before he played a game, just like Morgan the emailer saying the Andrew Wiggins. Well, they'd move on from Andrew Wiggins. They just got the guy. But I understand. I understand. Wiggins is a very polarizing.
He's going to be a hot potato, I think, for sure.
Yeah,
people are like, yeah, I mean, he's got that huge contract, but he's the number one pick. He's got talent. He's athletic. Maybe we can get something out of him, but he'll end up on 8 teams in 6 years.
I mean, at this point, I'd be shocked if the Warriors don't do something ahead of draft night here, because they have so much to play with. They have all these picks. You know, you got a big deal in Wiggins. You got the player exception still from Iguodala, 17.2. Huge one, yeah. They've got smaller ones as well. I don't think you can package those together, by the way, in the same trade. But yeah, I'll be shocked if they don't do something at this point. There's just so much smoke. It feels like there's got to be a little bit of fire with that. But we will see. Maybe they just end up taking Wiseman at number two. And they're like, all right, it's our big. We'll just go with a young big with these with all these shooters. We will see. All right, great first one to get us started. Next one here. Ayo, No Dunks crew. On a recent pod, Skeets mentioned how he always forgets that the Nets made back-to-back finals appearances in 02 and 03. Yes, I did. Couldn't believe it. I had to catch myself. This got me thinking about other successful teams over the past 10 to 15 years that basketball fans or the NBA community has forgotten about. What you got? Turnip, love you guys. No, awesome from Tim here. Just stopped right after love you guys. That is from Tim again. So yeah, teams... successful teams at that past 10 to 15 years that we've just forgotten about for whatever reason. Tass, why don't you get started?
Well, this one's definitely forgotten. It's not so much for what they accomplished that I want to talk about them, but who it was up against. The Washington Wizards were LeBron's first rival. It's forgotten. The first 3 years when Bron went to the playoffs, when he was a member of the Cavs, he went up against the Wizards.
That's a good one.
And the infamous teams of Gilbert Arenas, Karam Butler, Antoine Jameson, 3 straight years, and we were getting peak Gil. That first year, he averaged 34 points per game in that playoff series against the Cavs. It was only a 6-game series, but this was awesome Gil. He was 43% from 3-point land. He got injured for the second one, and he kind of wasn't the same player after that. It was a real short peak for Gilbert Arenas, but those two teams did not like each other, and you know, this is 2006, so this was kind of going back to an era where the big man was, you know, more traditional, was trying to put the best player on the other team on his ass, and the Wizards had Brendan Haywood, the big, big center, and there was a time where LeBron said, it was mid-series where he said, you know, I'm getting hit and not getting the calls, and Brendan Haywood was asked about that. We've got the clip here.
Oh, he's trying to hurt me. I mean, come on, man. This is the playoffs, man. He wears 23. He wants to be Michael Jordan. I can respect that. He's a great player. You saw what Mike went through. Mike got fouled way worse than this. You know what I'm saying? No one's trying to hurt him. Everybody's trying to play basketball, trying to play tough. Play basketball, leave it alone.
Trying to hurt me.
How do you forget that? That's great stuff. I mean, if that was today, I was just a little pre-Twitter. If that was today, that would be circulating for a good 48 hours. People would love it.
Oh,
people would
God.
Keep going back to it. But yeah, he was trying to rock LeBron's world, and it didn't really work out for the Wizards 3 straight years. It was 6 games the first time, then it was a sweep for the Cavs the second time with no Gilbert Arenas, no Karam Butler even.
Right.
And then the third time was another 6-gamer, but it was a decent battle. It was a decent battle.
We had the Deshaun Stevenson, right, versus LeBron in one of those years. That was exciting. That's a good pick. Yeah, the Wizards was a good team. I mean, you're obviously running into a young LeBron. Never going to be easy to get by him, but that's a good one. You got a team there to add, Lee?
Well, I mean, how well known are the Grit and Grind Grizzlies in that era that they went through between?
Right.
Casual basketball fans. So I think we obviously remember it there, but for what, seven straight seasons? What do I got? Seven straight seasons. They made the playoffs, made the conference finals, got swept by the Spurs. But they had that incredible upset of the Spurs as well, where they tanked to get the eighth spot, to draw the Spurs and then knocked them out in six games, which was really an incredible effort by a Memphis team. But you just kind of knew what you were getting with the Grizzlies every single season. A tough team. The Grindhouse there was a real, real tough place to win. And it's just a pity they never made it through to the NBA Finals. I would like to have seen that team, you know, because they were very well liked as well. Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, Tony Allen, then Vince when he came along as well. So they were one of those teams that I think everyone kind of had as a second team. You know, people sort of like to see them perform, but they just never quite got over the line there. And but they were fun. They were fun to watch, and they were always, always tough in those playoff games. They had a couple of good series against the Thunder as well, which were pretty good. So, you know, I think it's an era that, again, casual basketball fans I don't think will remember, but us hardcores who covered it will say they were a fun team. They were a fun team to cheer for anyway.
I'm going to add a team to the list for the future. The current Bucks team. The current Bucks team, when we do this question 10 years from now, they'll be on my list. Like, we're talking, you know, the last couple Bucks teams here. I forgot, like, the 1920 Bucks, you know, pre-pandemic, they were the earliest team to clinch a playoff berth since 1984. They had that wrapped up quickly. They were in, finished 56-17, again, in a very weird year. They had that 18-game winning streak, and of course, just flamed out in the playoffs. But this has been, they're very successful. I mean, this is like Budenholzer's Hawks teams, of course. Very successful regular season team, and came up short in the playoffs. Now, will it make a huge move this offseason? Try and get a Chris Paul, somebody else, to go even further, try and make a finals, maybe even win a title. Then that changes this, but I guess I'm banking on that not being the case. And then, unfortunately, like, you know, going out in a second round again, and then it's like, wow, this team won like basically 60 games 3 years in a row. They had MVP back-to-back, I mean, three times for all we know. Had all these great players, and they just couldn't get even to the conference finals. That's rough. So I'll go Bucks, looking in the future, looking at my crystal ball. But I liked your answers. Those are great. I love the Wizards one. And the Grit and Grind Grizzlies for the casual fan, no doubt. I'm sure the people in the stream teamers are maybe throwing out some other ones too. I don't have my eye on it. But
yeah, sort of in your wheelhouse of the Milwaukee Bucks, the 2015 Hawks won 60 games.
Oh, what's the common denominator there?
Yeah. Here, make your best Budenholzer face, Lee.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's hard. Yeah.
That's great audio.
Yeah.
Early 2000s, Celtics made a conference final, according to Jason Fire 34, the old Pierce and Antoine Walker. That was somewhat random. Yeah, the random conference finalists here or there. I was thinking about the Mellow Nuggets in that light. They, you know, snuck one in there. But yeah, it's hard to repeat those, as far as just success, getting to finals, that are forgotten. It's hard to repeat what the Nets did in 02 and 03 when you're looking for somebody that's forgotten. I mean, that just doesn't happen.
I'm still not convinced we're right. Yeah, like I keep going, what? They made it to back-to-back finals of 2003. I mean, I guess it is weird too. They played two different teams. It's just didn't really have much of a, I mean, I know they, I guess it, well, the one did go long, right? The one series. It just
Well, against the Spurs, yeah.
Feel they, like it. Yeah. So it was strange.
2-2.
Yeah.
2-2 in that series.
So weird.
I always remember it because Dikembe Mutombo was the center for the Sixers that went to the finals in 01, and then he got traded to the Nets and was the center for the Nets in 2002, and then you get a Todd McCullough center for 2003.
Right. Pinball Wizard. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Eat a man.
And maybe a part of this too is like they're not even the New Jersey Nets anymore. Like they're not, like, it's just like it feels like a completely different team, even though it's of course the same franchise in Brooklyn. Yeah, it's still weird to me that they went back to back. But that's it. If you can beat that one, let us know in the stream team or tweet at us at NoDunksInc.
Hello, Shop Blockers. Reading about recent Rockets history when Daryl Morey stepped down, I was reminded multiple times of Houston missing 27 straight threes in Game 7 against the Warriors back in 2018. It struck me that those few words, 27 straight threes, would be enough to ruin any Rockets fan's day. This got me thinking of other short phrases that haunt certain NBA fan bases. 3-1 lead for Warriors fans, 4 bounces for Sixers faithful, and LeBronto for Raptors fans are just a few recent examples. Can you guys think of any other NBA moments that torment a specific team's fan base in just a few words? This question ended up being a lot more evil than I intended. Turnips, Animal Crossing. That's from Mitch in Coburg. Mm. Lee, what do you think?
Well, I've got one for both you guys, and I'm pretty sure it's going to work. I'm going to test out my theory here.
Okay.
What's the score, Chris Childs?
Oh, how dare you? How dare you? You son of a bitch. Wow. I can picture that play so vividly.
What was he? What was he doing, man? What was he doing? You know,
I don't know.
Because it was off a free throw, too. Stackhouse hit a free throw. So, you know, it wasn't like... It wasn't in open play per se.
Right,
you
crazy turnover.
Exactly, like, So they had time.
And he's the point guard, too.
Yeah, and he was good when he... I think he only played like a year and a half in Toronto. I thought he was very good when he's in Toronto, but he just... Yeah, he just blew it. And, man, that was a tough way to lose that series.
Yeah, what year was that again? It's
2002.
Two, okay.
Yeah.
Couldn't remember if it was three.
Yeah, I got one more. This one's more generic. It's more for the entire league rather than just the team, but... With the second pick in the 1984 NBA draft.
That's good.
Portland Trailblazers select.
That's good. That's good. I got a couple here. I think you would anger a lot of Suns fans if you brought up... I don't even know if you need to throw the player's name. You just say hip check.
Oh, yeah.
The Robert Horry hip check, which obviously got some key players suspended in that series. Maybe that was going to be the one where Phoenix went to the finals. Maybe one. Mavs fans, I mean, things turned out well for them down the line, but... If you just said the We Believe Warriors to Mavs fans, that's going to be a rough one to try and swallow. And then for Kings fans, I mean, you either just say 2002 Western Conference Finals, you say 40 free throw attempts, maybe you just say 27 fourth quarter free throw attempts, maybe you just say Dick Bavetta, you know, a lot of things that are going to trigger that game six of that game where they got the Lakers got a very kind whistle. Though, if you remember, and I've heard other Kings players even, I think Doug Christie has said this, like... They had a game seven at home, and they missed 14 free throws in that one. They missed them. So it was not a referee, anyone doing that to them. That ultimately helped them blow that game and blow their chances of maybe winning a title. So those are the three that came to mind for poor Suns, Mavs, and Kings fans. You got anything else to add, Tass?
Just quickly, imagine we had a Kings-Nets final then in 2002. You might not have even remembered that one at all.
I'd be super upset. Mike Bibby would have a ring with the Kings, right? You got anything, Tass?
That's a little like Detroit San Antonio in 2005. It's a bit of the forgotten series.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the mailman doesn't deliver on Sunday. Kills Jazz fans. I mean, two free throws. Just needed one. They probably would have lost if they hit one. If Carl didn't hit both because MJ went down the other end, banged that home, and that was the end of that series. Well, I mean, malice at the Palace for Pacers fans specifically, because the Pistons had just come off winning the title, and then this. So I don't think it hurts them as much. It hurts that Ron Artest was gone for the rest of that season. And that team was good. Mm-hmm. You talk about the Suns potentially making the finals. If there wasn't the suspensions and the hip check there, you know, the Pacers were awesome with Ron Artest and Jermaine O'Neal, and things just fell apart from there. I think for Hornets fans... Just Kobe. One word. They drafted Kobe and traded him for Vlade Divac. It could have been a lot different if they had Kobe Bryant on their team. And a weird one, but sort of like the We Believe Warriors. For Cavs fans, LeBron in 2010. But also LeBron coming back and helping them win. But that was, it was a storybook in a weird way, but... We all remember the jerseys burning in 2010 when he left.
I think you would, in that one, you would say the decision for sure. That would trigger some maybe Cavs fans, but you're right. Ended up working out for everybody. So that's great. That's a fun question. That's a great question, Mitch. And again, if you got answers, let us know in the stream team or tweet them in at No Dunks Inc. We got lots of questions still to get to here, but first a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, next question here. Dear nude onlookers, a friend who doesn't watch a ton of basketball remarked during the finals that the Miami Heat logo looks like garlic. I looked at it closely, and lo and behold, it does look like a well-defined hunk of garlic with a wispy little haircut. All right. Which other NBA logos could moonlight as foods? P.S. Grammarly helped me make this email clearer and more concise. Turnips. Love the trade. Stock them. That's from Angelo in Brooklyn. Yes. Okay. So, yeah. I mean, I can see the garlic there in the Heat logo. But any other NBA logos that can moonlight as foods, Tass?
Well, it's really good. The Heat one is really good. Let's take a quick look at that garlic clove.
Yeah. I see it.
Totally true. I found this a little difficult, but when I looked at the Blazers logo, kind of looks like a bowl of spaghetti. Yeah.
Okay.
Look at all those noodles. Or specifically, if you put that fork in there and you give it a twirl, there it is.
Right.
You got a fork full of spaghetti right there. So Blazers logo, classic logo right there.
I looked at all these logos. I was struggling to come up with an answer. I did stop on the Blazers one, and I was like, this looks like something, but I couldn't get to spaghetti task. Way to do it. Lee, any luck with any of the other ones?
Same as you. I was like, oh my God, what am I seeing here? The only thing I can sort of see is the Indiana Pacers logo is kind of someone holding like a chicken drumstick or a turkey drumstick.
Oh, okay, maybe. Not bad. Yeah, they're like the fair, eh? That exactly. Medieval times, they got the turkey leg.
Exactly. That's the best one I could come up with. So, but they've changed so much over the years as well, you know?
That's true.
Like everybody. I mean, there should have been
just
a few more.
Just when you think you've seen an NBA logo and you figured out the food it looks like, they go and change the logo on you. It's
crazy. Crazy.
Yes.
There's an old Rockets R that is kind of looks like it's dripping at the bottom, like it's kind of like a split
barbecue sauce.
Yeah, I don't know. And it looks like it's definitely dipped into something, but the R doesn't look like food. So.
Right. And I'll just say this now, okay? Just save the email of sending us in, pointing out if you turn the Bulls logo upside down, it's like a robot reading a Bible, okay? Mm-hmm. That's been around since the Wizards were battling LeBron James in the playoffs. So just, you don't need to let us know. We're well aware. It's crazy. You're right. It looks like a robot. And it's so funny. That comes around about once a year. That just finds life again on Twitter or on the blogs or whatever. Oh, look at this. It's like, yep, we've been looking at that for 15 plus years. I'm sure I blogged about that in one of my first years. And it'll be around. It's amazing, though. All right. Let's
what about
going
the... I don't know if you remember back in 2016 when Jägermeister went after the Bucks for their logo that. It's pretty close. It's pretty close.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed. Are you a Jägermeister fan, Lee?
I've had it, but not for... I don't know. I couldn't tell you the last time I've had it. But, you know, I've tried it. Yeah, right. It's fine.
Have you ever done, what's it called? A Dr. Jager Pepper? Bomb. Don't they call it a Dr. Pepper where you drop a shot of Jägermeister in a pint of beer and you chug it? It tastes like Dr. Pepper.
No, I don't think I've ever done that. No, I think I've just had shots of it and it's like, I don't see what the big deal is. Not that special.
That's fair.
Great. Good. Glad we cleared up all of that. Yeah. All right, next one's a long one.
I'm just not a big shots guy, to be honest with you. I'm not a big shots guy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Yeah, because you're not 20.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. One night I remember having a few too many tequila slammers, and that made a bit of a mess of me that day. Yeah. I remember I came home because I'd been out, and I slept all day, and Mum was just like, what did you drink last night? Because you're usually not that bad. Like, you're usually, if you're hungover, you're usually up and about. But I was just in bed all day.
I said, cool story, bro.
Think I was drinking tequila, a little bit too much tequila. She's like, okay.
Yeah, Lee, we've never done a shot while we watch the AFL Grand Final.
Hey, it's on tomorrow morning.
I know.
4:30 in the morning.
You want to do a tequila shot at 5:30 in the morning or whatever it is?
Let's do Sambuca instead. I think that's more
love
traditional.
Sambuca.
You gotta do Bundy or Bundaberg rum. Yeah. That's the Australian. Basically, it's the Australian screech for the Canadians out there.
Oh, there you go. Mm. This is going to be the first time in a long time we're not getting together to watch it, obviously.
Unfortunately, But I think I got it wrong. It's actually 4:30 our time as first bounce.
They started
daylight saving out on the East Coast before we've ended it here. So.
And that's weird because we usually watch it at night here in America because they play the game during the day. But yes. You're saying for the first time, whatever, they're playing this at night over there in Australia?
First time ever. First time ever. Night grand final. First time ever.
Does the ball bounce differently under the moonlight?
I mean, most of the big games are played at night anyway now because of the TV audience. But first time ever, it's not been in at the MCG. Apart from 1991, they had it at a different ground because they were renovating the MCG. So
there you go.
A lot of traditionalists are like, it's not the same. It's not in Melbourne, but it's a national game.
Who's in the final this year?
Two Victorian teams, ironically.
It's
Richmond again. Richmond going for their third in 4 years against Geelong. So,
go Cats.
I'm going the Tigers. I'm going for the Tigers.
I'm going Cats.
Yeah. I think I would say Richmond are probably about a 10 to 15 point favorite, I would say.
Ooh.
I would say. Okay. We'll see. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Good luck to both teams. Hope it's a high-scoring affair.
Yeah,
is that what you say?
Yeah. I mean, you cleaned up last year. Remember, you won the the money line.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I'm really good at picking AFL games.
I won a footy in the raffle. You got a six pack. It was our best night last year for sure.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm gonna miss this. I can't believe our tradition's coming to an end. All right, I'm coming over to your house 4:30 in the morning.
All right, great.
I'm bringing tequila. All right, we got a long one here. Let's get to it.
Does Geelong play before their games? If they play Geelong, 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 Long, Lee, Long, Long, Long. Come on. Sorry about that. Listen, JD, get the cool story, bro. Audio drop here. I can't talk. The cool story drop for this guy here. Heyo, absence of jams. On the latest beach episode, Lee sounded truly terrifying when talking about the delivery room / stinky beef situation. I don't think he would ever actually kill a man, but I probably shouldn't make any assumptions about a man who sits backwards on a toilet to pee. I had my own smelly delivery room situation when my son was born in April, but I was the villain. My wife was going on hour 18 in the hospital, and I was getting hungry, so I ordered some Chipotle delivery for dinner. Unfortunately, immediately after I ordered, the doctor came in and decided it was time for the epidural. As the nurses prepared to inject a giant needle into my wife's spine, I got an alert that my delivery driver had arrived. So I slowly slunk out of my room to grab my food. This was peak quarantine, no eating was allowed in any public areas, so I returned to the delivery room and ate my delicious burrito bowl in the corner, all while my wife glared at me. She hadn't been allowed to eat a proper meal since over 18 hours ago, and here I was crushing a massive Chipotle bowl. I had to order double meat to hit a delivery minimum, which only made things worse. Yeah, so I'm sure your wife was looking over at you thinking, this guy ordered double meat? Needless to say, what I thought would be a nice hearty dinner instead turned into an absolute disaster. Bringing it back to basketball. Hopefully the baby went okay. What are your favorite examples of NBA teams thinking they are set up for success only to totally implode in hilarious fashion? Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome. That's from Steve Ward. In Chicago, eating that Chipotle bowl hard. Thanks, Steve, for sending that in.
Do you think they named their baby Chipotle? Chipotle Ward?
Guac. Money.
What's your baby's name? Extra Guac. Yeah, okay, so back to basketball. That was a very cool story, bro, no doubt. I did like it. I enjoyed it. I'm glad that we included good. It. And you're right, Lee would. I think Lee would kill a man. I think he would.
Yes. Yes, that was as close
as I've
come.
You're saying like that you have.
I haven't, but yeah. And that hospital room, that was as close as I've come. Right. And I would have pleaded guilty, but I've also said I'm not going to jail for that because he deserved it. So
right.
Changing the rules.
Okay. So yeah, favorite examples of NBA teams that were sort of set up and they imploded. I got a couple. One of them I already mentioned in this podcast. The Mavericks, that's a rough one. I mean, the Mavericks were 67-15 in 06-07. That's a hell of a record, after having just made the finals the year before. Dirk won MVP, and they got sort of embarrassed by the We Believe Warriors. I mean, you had Steven Jackson shutting down the MVP in Dirk and Matt Barnes all up in his shorts and stuff like that. So, hey, I don't know if it's hilarious, but that was like, damn, that's a real good team losing to an 8 seed there. 2010-11 Heat is an obvious one just because they were the not one, not two, not three, blah, blah, blah. The decision, the super team, the villains, and they lose. the first year. Of course, they had some success after that. But to see them lose, I think people were loving that. They were relishing the fact that especially LeBron came up short after going down to South Beach, taking his talents. And then I'll add one more. I'll say a recent one. I think a lot of people enjoyed the 2019-20 Clippers imploding and blowing a 3-1 lead themselves to the Denver Nuggets. A lot of people dislike Paul George. A lot of people dislike Patrick Beverley. Kawhi even polarizing, I think, to some people with the load management. And then, of course, Toronto and Canada and him leaving. You know, some people upset, some people not, like myself. But I think people took some a little joy in them falling to the Nuggets after being up 3-1. So those are three that come to mind. You got anything to add there, Lili?
Yeah, I just on the Kawhi stuff, I think it is very interesting because the Raptors won the championship and when Kawhi took off 22 games. But the championship sort of papered over any cracks because if he left after a year, and let's say that the four bouncer didn't go in Philly and they lose, mm-hmm. I think there would have been like, man, the Raptors players didn't like the fact that Kawhi took off games whenever he felt like it, but they won and won the championship. Whereas the Clippers, now it's like, see, you did all that load management and we came up short. So then they start turning on each other a bit. They start pointing the fingers a bit, you know? So that's an interesting scenario that's playing out there. So for me, I've got a couple too. The 2012-2013 LA Lakers were second favorite heading into that season, second championship favorite behind the Miami Heat. That's, of course, with Dwight and Steve Nash.
Yeah.
And they got swept by the Spurs in the first round. They had a few injuries, but there's a fantastic gif out there of Dwight Howard sort of slunking to the bench and Tim Duncan just smiling the whole way, just like in a classic Tim Duncan fashion, like, just laughing at Dwight because they went in, they had that Sports Illustrated cover where they had the unironed shorts and singlets they were wearing, and it just fell apart.
This is going to be fun.
Exactly. It fell apart very, very quickly. And then the other one is the 2012-13 Brooklyn Nets roster. Of course, they made the huge trade there in the off-season. Or was it 13-14, actually, maybe? I might be off a season there. But it was when the Nets gave up three unprotected first-round picks for Pierce and Garnett, and I think Jason Terry as well. And we knew that was short-sighted at the time. And if you look at some of the players the Celtics have got out of that draft now, like Brown and Tatum, that one just keeps on coming back to haunt the Brooklyn Nets. So that was pretty fun. I mean, of course, they did upset the Raptors in the first round, which is not fun. Another sort of bad day for the Raptors here. But then they got killed by the Heat again. LeBron and Dwayne Wade killed them in the second round. So I think people enjoyed seeing just how desperate the Nets were to win, and the expectations that the owner Prokhorov gave them, and they gave up their mortgage, their future, and they didn't even get close to a championship.
Right,
so
right.
A couple of fun ones there.
Billy King is not my GM. just feel like singing. Yeah, Billy making a bad move there. To me, I go back for a team that really disappointed after the expectations were really high. I go back to 2000, Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill teaming up with the Orlando Magic. I just thought, two Hall of Famers in their prime. They're going to win a playoff series. One. They didn't win a playoff series. Now, a lot of that has to do with Grant Hill. No doubt. Because he was injured. You know, he had some serious injuries where he had a staph infection. They had to rush him back to the hospital. And that was really worrisome. I think he had a 104 fever. It's so amazing that he came back to play the way he did for such a long career. But I just thought Tracy McGrady, he left the Raptors for a reason, to be the number one guy. And it's crazy when you look back. He led the league in scoring twice as a member of the Magic. He was a baller. He was an all-NBA player all four seasons that he was there, which I totally forgot. Twice on first team, twice on the second team. But the embarrassing part enters in 2003. If you guys remember, they were playing the Pistons, and they're up 3-1. And Tracy McGrady was at the podium, and he said, "It feels good to get into the second round." Now, maybe he forgot that the five-game series had been gone that season. Maybe he thought it was a five-game series, and they won. But the Orlando Magic blew that 3-1 lead, and the Pistons came back because they used that as bulletin board material, I'm pretty sure. And Tracy McGrady didn't get out of the first round there. So that was ugly, ugly stuff. Grant Hill and Tracy McGrady, you just thought, those two amazing players, but yeah, didn't come together whatsoever. And then McGrady left and went to Houston and balled out there. He was amazing there, but the playoffs sort of haunted him as well for a bit.
For sure. All right, our next one here. Hi, guys. I discovered you on my road trip across the country while I was moving from State College, Pennsylvania, back to Los Angeles this past summer. It was right before the bubble relaunched, and you guys had been doing a bunch of stories on what was happening leading up to it. It was on my stretch of drive, driving from Dallas to New Mexico on I-10, that I decided to really get back in the know of what was going on in the bubble. And a few podcasts later, I was hooked on No Dunks. I got a dog back in August, and No Dunks has been my official dog walking podcast. Oh, thank you. Has there ever been a time you were on a long drive or doing something so boring, you decided to listen to something new, and then you got hooked? Keep up the good work. That's from Virginia, now back in Los Angeles. Tass, what do you got?
I got a weird one. For some reason, I can't remember why I was looking at the top charts of Apple Podcasts, because I needed just something to listen to. So I had listened to Joe Rogan a little bit a long time ago. This was, I don't know, like 7, 8, 9 years ago. I don't know how long it was. But Joe Rogan's been around for a long time. So I thought, I'll just click onto Joe Rogan here. But I wasn't clicking onto Joe Rogan. I clicked on the Joe Rogan Experience, a show that recapped the Joe Rogan Show.
Wow.
So I started listening, and these three guys are just talking about Joe Rogan and the stories he was telling on the latest episode. And they were saying, you know, it wasn't a great episode. I've heard those Joe Rogan stories before. And I'm like, this was on the top charts. It was, I don't know, 10, 11, 12. It was way up there while Joe Rogan was, you know, obviously hovering at the top. But because of Joe Rogan's name, this got up there. And it wasn't a very good experience listening to this experience, I got to be honest. I'm not sure if they're still on top of the charts, but I don't think they are. So that experience, not so good.
We should start a podcast commenting on them commenting on Joe Rogan's podcast. See how many layers we can get this. Wow, that's crazy.
What happened to the Tweet of the Week Army podcast, which is song?
That was going there for a while, yeah.
Yeah. I'll go next here because I've done a long road trip. I've driven back to Canada once or twice here a couple years ago now, of course, from Atlanta. It's a long drive, 14, 15, 16 hours. And one of those trips, this was all Nora's doing. She's plugged into the crime podcasts. She found one called Crime Town. That's what it's called. And man, I was hooked. We were both hooked. It made the drive go so quick because it's like a serial documentary podcast produced by Gimlet Media. This was years ago now. I think 2016 is when it started. It's about how organized crime has shaped like particular American cities. And the first whole season was about Providence, Rhode Island. You know, so a city I know nothing about. Had no idea there's all these mob ties and all these weird characters and this organized crime. So well done. The characters in this are amazing. And it's real. And I think it was like 18 official episodes, and then there was a bunch of bonus episodes. And I just remember that drive like it was like, we're not stopping. I'm so into this. I'm so in the zone driving. We're making great time here. And like, this is just, the hours are flying by because we're just enthralled with this podcast. So Crime Town, shout out to Crime Town again, 2016. I think they maybe started to do a second season about Detroit. I think I didn't have a trip to go on, so I wasn't listening to it. So you can correct me if I'm wrong. Some of the listeners out there, I don't even know if they continued with it, but look it up if you're ever got a long drive. Crime Town, 2016, about Providence, Rhode Island. It's fascinating stuff just because the characters the guys are talking to are amazing.
Skeets, we're low on gas. I don't care.
Oh, no. we're finishing this episode at least, even if it ends us on the side of the interstate. Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. Lee, you got an answer?
Well, I mean, I haven't been on a long road trip for a while, but we've been on a couple of 2 or 3 hour trips with the boys. And I just have to say the listening and driving experience is different when you got kids because they don't care what you want to listen to. They want to listen to their own music over and over and over again. And if you want to stay sane, you just have to sort of bow and give in. And they like music, but sometimes they just like the Despicable Me soundtrack as well.
Sure.
Yeah, Minions and stuff like that. And sometimes you're driving along, and I'm a little bit different to you. I'm driving as fast as I can to get to the destination so I can turn it off because you're driving along here. I can't do it, but you hear the Despicable Me's voices, and it's just like over and over. One more time, Dad, one more time. Especially the 8-year-old's not too bad, but the 4-year-old's at that stage, like, again,
yeah,
again, again. And you're just like, oh, my God, no more, please, please. So,
That's when you stick in an AirPod.
Lee, this is why you're a great dad. I'm a good dad. You're a great dad because I would never fucking do that ever in a million years. You're listening to what I want to listen to. There's no way that I'm listening to whatever they want to listen to. Not a chance.
Well, look, I guess I start the trip by not saying anything about the music. I just sort of hope that no one's listening. But, you know, after half an hour, they're like, can we listen to this? Can we listen to that? And I'm just like... All right, I've tried resisting in the past, but it just creates a worse environment. I guess I have to say, when it's just me and Roxana in the car, I'm probably like, driver decides. No, there's no negotiation there. But the kids will wear you down, man. They'll wear you down.
I can't believe you haven't yelled to the back seat, "We're listening to English Nick and the River."
Oh, man. Exactly. 97.1, the River.
That's right, man. Station, but, I was just listening to it this morning.
I tell you what, the boys, they love. They love a couple. They love Queen. They love Will Smith. And they love Britney Spears as well. Right. So, you know, we get a little bit of sort of 90s music and sort of 70s and 80s music in there as well. So I don't mind it. You know, I like Big Will. I like Queen. Britney's okay.
JD, do you have an answer for this?
Well, it's not. It's kind of almost the birth of this podcast was I discovered podcasting, not while I was driving, but when I was doing a little show called Caillou back in the day. It was 2004, 2005. And I was tasked with doing the feet only. I only did the feet that first season of Caillou. So I would sit there and I couldn't stand Caillou's voice. So I muted the dialogue track. And all I would do is just add feet. Every time there was a footstep on the screen, I would have to add a sound effect. So, and it was right when Lost had just come out. Lost came out in 2004. So as I was listening to audiobooks, but it was starting to get a little expensive. So then I discovered iTunes podcasts, and I listened to three different Lost podcasts. Those were my first foray into podcasts, and they were terrible. But I listened to them, and I was like, "Oh, I could do this. We could do this. Let's do a podcast." And the Basketball Jones was born.
Wow! So we can actually thank Caillou, I guess, and Lost for starting the Basketball Jones podcast. Down the hatch we go.
Who was there was another podcast you were listening to at the time. It was a couple, right? A man and a woman.
Keith and the girl. I think they might still be going. Wow! I think they're still going. So they're like the OGs. The OGs.
Yeah, I remember that one. Keith and the girl. Good call. Great questions, guys. Let's take one more quick break before we get to a few more.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for those warm summer days. Pool season's coming soon, so I've been hitting the weights with Peloton and my guy Adrian Williams, trying to get my muscle on in order to expand my cannonball splash radius. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. It's easy to personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance, Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you already excel in. And their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Shout out to Adrian, Aditi, Andy, and Emma. I love you all so much. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back.
We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, a few more questions. We got to wrap this up. We're running long here today.
Sup, yeah, floaters. When I had my birthday a couple of weeks ago, my brother showed me a video. It was the one and only Skeets wishing me a happy birthday. I was so surprised and so happy that I had to hold back a few tears of joy. Normally, I kind of expect the gifts I get, but that video surprised me so much, it kind of overshadowed all the other gifts of the day. So my question to you guys is, when was the time you received a gift that you would have never expected? Greetings from Germany. That's from Paul Grimmig. Thank you for the email, Paul. Skeets, this one's all you.
Wow, that's fantastic. I'm happy to hear someone in Paul's life came through with the cameo from old Skeetsy. Go to cameo.com, find J.E. Skeets if you want a message from me. All that money goes to charity anyway, so might as well do it if you want a video from me. I enjoy doing them. They're a lot of fun, so I'm glad you liked it, Paul. My answer for this, I already talked once about Nora surprising me with a trip to Dublin way back in the day. That was cool, because that's when we didn't have any money either. We were basically poor. Trying to get by in Toronto, which is an expensive damn city, but then she somehow sprung this little trip to Dublin for like 4 days. That was awesome. But most recently, Nora made me a photo book of one of our favorite trips to Western Canada when I went to Vernon, British Columbia to see friends. And then Nora and I went sort of a road trip to Banff National Park and Jasper National Park. And it was such an awesome trip. We were gone for like 3 or 4 weeks. So she did the old classic, sort of scrapbook, I guess. But, you know, you can like upload the photos to these services now and like make these really slick productions. So this was one of my birthday gifts. It was awesome. And we got a second one for free because they accidentally put a weird caption. On one of the photos, like in Banff National Park, it said like, accidentally, I don't know how, it said like Mongolia or something like that. It said like Cambodia or something, some weird country that they just for some reason slapped on there. So they sent us another one. But yeah, that was a nice gift. That's a thoughtful gift. Because man, there's like, it's a legit book. We obviously had a ton of photos from seeing friends and doing a bunch of stuff and going to all these parks. I mean, it took her a lot of time and effort to put into this. So something like that's always next level. So that was very, very kind of her. So
oh, that's my buddy Grish's move. I'm surprised that my buddy Grish didn't make it the scrapbook. That guy makes a scrapbook for everything. Took a trip down to the store and made a scrapbook.
But here's me buying some eggs at Publix. Yeah, he does like that. That's a Grish move. But Nora did it a lot better than anyone I've seen from Grish. I'll tell you that. Yeah,
it's easy to make a mistake on those captions, though. I'm sure that wasn't there, Nora's mistake, but it's
it was just a random thing. I think I don't know how the heck it popped in there on one of the photos. But you're right, a ton of work. Because you're right, it's not just the photos. There are like, this is when we were doing this, or this is where we were, and stuff like that. So it's extremely well done.
Lee, you've done that before. Haven't you shutterflied before?
I shutterfly tons of stuff. Basically, every Mother's Day and anniversary for Roxana, I do something off shutterfly. So we got plates and bowls and mugs and drinking bottles and all sorts of stuff covered in photos. Yeah, we've got scrapbooks all over the place. But because it's good because... otherwise, your photos just stay on your phone.
Yeah.
So many times you get, I've got all these great photos, especially from a trip. Then you get home and you just kind of forget about them. So, you know, it's a good thing Roxana's birthday, our anniversary and Mother's Day are very, very close by. So I go crazy on Shutterfly for about 6 weeks and order all sorts of stuff. And, you know, it's a bit repetitive, but it's fine. It's, you know.
It's just you standing like this in every photo. It's a little weird. Yeah. In a puffy jacket in front of the kids. Yeah. In front of the cake.
Great.
Yeah. My mother-in-law for our kids does it monthly. We get a monthly little book.
I think the Kirbys do that too, don't they? I'm pretty sure they do.
We get something on Instagram where it's not monthly. It's like when you hit a certain amount of photos, they just automatically triggers it. So
Now it's a little much. Monthly is a little much.
It is.
You said repetitive. It definitely gets a little repetitive. It's like when you were young and you had a girlfriend for a long period of time, Did you celebrate monthly? Did you have a monthly anniversary? I did. Mistake. Just do it every so often, every few months. Now it is really nice to have and get him off the phone. Lee, you got an answer for this, baby?
Well, kind of a little bit like what Skeets was saying there. A friend of mine once flew over from, I was in London. He flew from Australia on Emirates to England. And something happened on his flight. And they gave him a free return flight to Dubai from London. But he didn't really need it because he had his return ticket. And they weren't going to give him anything else. They said, this is what we give you. You can transfer it to somebody else. Mm. And he gave me a ticket to Dubai, one ticket. And I was like, oh, perfect. I can't wait. I'm going to use it for sure. And I never used it because I was like, I kept trying to organize someone to go with because I didn't want to go by myself, like all the way out there. And it was one of those things that sort of got pushed back. A few people were like, yeah, I'm in, I'm out. And then I ended up just not using it. It expired after like 18 months or something. I can't remember what it was. And I was like, I can't believe I just had a free ticket to Dubai and I never used it. Never been there.
Wow.
And I missed out.
So many photos of you standing in front of cool-looking things in Dubai we missed out on. You in the desert alone. I guess we have photos of you in the desert enjoying it.
I wanted to do that thing you can do in Dubai where apparently you can go surfing. You know, on the same day, you can go surfing outside and then go inside to that massive skiing. Have you been there? Did you do that?
I've been to Dubai. I didn't go to that, though. Yeah.
That's what I would have done. But this was before Twitter and Instagram, so would it have even been worth it, you know?
Couldn't make a scrapbook out of it.
A weird gift that I didn't expect was basketball related. 2017 All-Star Game in New Orleans. Check into my hotel room. There's a bottle of champagne sitting there with a card. Card signed by Isaiah Thomas. Sherlin Champagne that he has brought into the NBA world and was given to some of the media members there. And it was the first official champagne of a celebration, of a championship celebration. I guess that was associated with the Lakers this year. It wasn't really made a huge deal, but yeah, I was surprised to see that. And I just bring it up because I know it angers JD because he didn't get a bottle of champagne. And you too, Lee, right?
Yeah. And JD and I were at the post All-Star Games party and someone took our details specifically and said, it's coming. It's on its way. And we're like, great. Never happened.
Hope Zeke sees this, man.
Oh, where is it? Blake? Was that his name? Yeah. Blake?
I can't remember, but I remember getting excited and me and JDB sort of like, great, we're getting our champagne as we deserve.
Right.
Never showed up.
Yeah, well, there was no way we were getting that champagne. I mean, that was the night we were leaving, wasn't it? Like, it
no,
was...
but they took our address to like send it to Atlanta. Yeah.
Also, we worked with the guy for 3 more years or whatever. And... Mm.
Every time you saw him, you're like, mime drinking a champagne bottle.
Exactly.
Do you think he fills up the Sherlin bottles with water after they're done? Just because he uses them on props as props on the NBA TV set pretty often. Nah, they're drinking. I think they've got to connect. They're not going through Blake.
I hope you guys get your bottle.
So do I.
One of these.
Love champagne.
Did you ever get those jeans you were supposed to get in the mail?
Ah, from what was that guy's name? Yeah. He was angry. He was angry at my jeans and he said he's going to send me a few pairs. All right, great. Never turned up.
Never got them.
All talk. Muzzlewump. That was his name. Muzzlewump.
All talk. Muzzlewump didn't come through.
I know.
You didn't get your jeans? Womp, womp.
Oh, man. All right. One more before we wrap this bad boy up. Hey, Toe Hunks. Long time, first time. On one of your recent Beach Steppin' episodes, Skeets finally noticed that Lee and JD had sneakily replaced the stumpy feet guy in the opener with old eight toes. Yeah, there they are. Now, I'm very much team podcast since I listen to your show every day on the way to and from work. But when I heard this exchange, I had to go back and watch the YouTube video. I was stunned to see that the first three toes on Old Eight Toes, right foot, are fused. And that's why he's called Old Eight Toes. For some reason, I had always assumed that Old Eight Toes was called Old Eight Toes because he was straight up missing one toe from each foot. I went all these years listening to your show thinking I knew all about your friends' bodies, but boy was I wrong. Anyways, my question to you is this. What's one time you thought you were in on a joke only to realize you had been sorely mistaken the whole time? Eight toes, rhino sets, Grisham. That's from Bayan from London, Ontario, Canada. Shout out to London. I don't really have an answer to the question, but I'm 100% on board with what he thought. For the longest time, we heard old eight toes. I think I've said this before. I thought that just meant that he had four toes on each foot. I would have never, ever in a million years had thought that it was because three of them were lumped into one.
Yeah.
Fused together.
Yeah. Appearance of 10, but three operators a single unit. So they only count as eight.
Yeah.
You know, realistic. Now, I've got another mate called Kit Kat who's missing. He was born without a thumb. And so he's only got four fingers. So that's legit. That's legit.
I'm called Kit Kat. What's going on in the water in Australia? You got to drink more oxygen water.
Everybody's
coming out with weird body parts. How close are you to a nuclear plant?
Kit Kat's from South Africa. So,
it's okay.
But it's funny because... you know, when you go to meet somebody, it's on his right hand. So when you shake hands, you know, you expect the thumb to be there and you slide right past and you sort of grab his forearm.
You're already bad at handshakes as it is. That must be a nightmare for you.
Yeah, I know. That one's one of those ones you're like, what the hell did I miss there? You know,
but he was born without a thumb?
He was born without a thumb, yeah. Yeah, he's a great guy, Kit Kat, yeah.
Sure.
Really good guy. But, you know, he's sort of like, you know, people, every time you meet someone new, he's like, yeah, I was born without a thumb. No big deal.
He must be fucking pissed with you every time you do your old two thumbs up. I'll tell you that. You're just flaunting it in his face.
Nah, he's a good sport, Kit Kat. He's fine.
All
right. Yeah, he's another guy who has a tattoo of Lee, but it's just one thumb. One thumb up. Kit Kat. That's legit. It's legit.
That's a great nickname, honestly.
It is a great nickname.
It's just a fun thing to say. It's so perfect, the visual. I'm on board with that. I like that. Do you have an answer for this, Lee?
I was trying to think of one. It is because in school, you know, sometimes when like you would, you know, put the sticker on the back of someone that says kick me and all that, you'd be in on that. But sometimes you were the one who was being kicked as well. I had another story, but that's that one's not appropriate for to broadcast because of it involves a couple of people. But that was a pretty funny story one time in Spain, actually. In Barcelona.
You can't say that was a pretty funny story.
I know. I was trying to think, could I somehow shoehorn this in without giving away the details? But no, I can't, unfortunately. Sorry about that. But it's tough. It's tough, really. I guess the only time we've all been in on a joke is when we used to hide the orange gum from our producer, Matt. You know, because he would eat the whole packet in like 10 minutes and then act like he hasn't. And so we would have a whole fresh like 20 packet thing of it and someone would hide it.
We would have to hide it, yeah.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden Matt would leave the office and come back and there'd just be a packet on the desk and no one would say anything. And a couple of times he was looking around like, where did that come from?
it was Matt's birthday yesterday. We should have sent him a package that would have appeared to be a whole array of gum, but then he'd open it and there'd be a note. Oh, we're hiding it from you, man.
No, come find it. It would be all the gum that we've already chewed and wrapped up in the corner of the packet and just put back in.
Yeah, because he wouldn't throw those in the trash. He would pile them up next to his, like, he would have like 10 pieces of chewed gum there. And he wouldn't think that was weird either. Of all the things that he thinks I did that was gross, he didn't think that was gross.
Yeah.
It's fair. That's a good
point. He's so against biting into a fresh piece of fruit.
But
he'll have used gum on a table for hours. I'll give a quick answer to this one. And it does involve a thumb, actually. Yeah, it's not a Kit Kat story, but the emailer signed off there with eight toes, Rhino Sets Grisham, a few of our friends. And mine does involve Rhino Sets, who was once Canadian Junior Bowler of the Year. The man knows his bowling. He won the TSN Classic Bowl Championship. The announcer said, "This kid's got maple moxie." Yeah, the Canadian definitely had a lot of maple moxie. Yeah. Rhino Sets, actually, he told me that in the PBA, the Professional Bowlers Association, they had started bowling with two hands, and I didn't believe him. I said, "There's no chance." Like, they would put two hands on the ball and throw it.
Right.
You know, they stick their thumb in there, stick their other two fingers in there, corral it, and do a their big spin. I just thought it's not legal. It's not possible but he had me. I just had myself because I didn't believe it for a while, and then I saw it. The best bowlers in the world now bowl with two hands. Jason Belmonte, he's a two-hand bowler, flinging it out there. It's crazy.
How can you do that?
But you mean when you say two hands, he's not literally sticking fingers from both hands into the... Okay,
like,
yeah.
He's like just what using, kids do.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's got both hands. He guides it with the other hand. Like it's on the whole time until he lets it go. It's not a traditional rear back with your one arm. Kind of, you know, it's less of a wind up, and that's two hands. That's
great. I mean, I'm gonna say it almost makes more sense, doesn't it? We shoot a basketball with two hands. You use your other one as like a guiding hand.
Yeah, it just feels like cheating. After seeing generations of generations bowl with one hand, but it's the way the game's evolving. It's the way the sport's evolving. But doesn't it feel like cheating? You're using two hands.
I don't like it.
The old schoolers definitely don't like it. They think they think it's cheap.
I mean, cheating, I don't think it's the right word for it. It's unorthodox. It'd be like someone shooting underhand free throws, I would guess. I mean, it's still the same thing. You're still doing the same. The goal is not changed. It's just how you're going about it. It looks silly.
But I think with bowling, with professional bowlers, the spin they put on the ball, I think it would be harder to do that with two hands, you know, because you've got to curve it around and... You know, it's got a grip and then
maybe the second hand while he's throwing it is like spinning it even more, coming down on it.
The spin's still there. It's just it makes it a tiny bit easier, I guess, to be able to guide it where you want.
We got Dave Seton here in the comments.
Oh, geez, his brother.
Someone's talking about...
He's the better bowler, by the way. Bowling. If you talk to Dave.
Is that the real Dave Seton? Let's see. 300 is a perfect game, says Dave Seton. 12 strikes in a row. 800... Series is three consecutive games adding to at least 800. 800 is much harder.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about this before, right? Yeah.
He's just having a chat with somebody in the in the chat here. Because Erwin Orosio asked, is a 800 still better than a perfect game?
Wow. People don't forget
that's
anything.
The debate. Three games to get you to 800 or a perfect game. Yeah. Is that more difficult? Because Dave Seton... He's never bowled a perfect game from what I remember, but he's done the 800 in three games. So that's the debate. But listen, Rhino Sentin's, he's got the resume to prove it. Canadian Junior Bowl of the Year. You can watch him on YouTube. TSN Classic Bowl Championship. He's got the Maple Moxie. You mentioned Vic Router a couple of weeks ago, Lee, the TSN broadcaster. He's calling Rhino Sentin's Classic Bowl Championship as he takes
the sports,
home the
man.
Big check.
That's incredible. I mean, when you said he does all the sports, I didn't think bowling was up there as well. I mean, Olympics and hockey and maybe basketball, tennis, but bowling as well, man. What a star Vic is.
All right, go check that clip out. Let's call it there because that's a lot of bowling talk to end a basketball podcast with, but we appreciate all your emails. Keep them coming. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com or tweet them in at NoDunksInc. Thanks to everybody who joined us live here as part of the stream team on YouTube. If you haven't listened to some of our podcasts earlier this week, I highly recommend you do. We talked to John Schumann about the most intriguing free agents, which we ended up realizing wasn't the most intriguing list in the world, but we had a lot of fun with Shu. And then we talked to Ben Standig talking about that Athletic NBA agent survey, which came out in two parts this week on The Athletic. Some juicy stuff in there, some comments on LeBron and some other things. So go check that out. That was a lot of fun as well. So those were two guests we had on this week. If you haven't listened to those podcasts, go and download them. I think you'll really enjoy them. And thanks again for joining us. Keep questions coming. We'll call it there. Everybody have a safe and fun weekend. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
I don't want to do this, but a little bit more bowling talk. And since we had John Schumann on this week, who likes to correct people with a well actually, I just got well actually by my friend Dave Seton. He said, I have four 300s, four perfect games, and was the youngest in Ontario at the time to shoot an 800. Way to go. I just got well actually by my buddy on this show. That's crazy.
And he's not even the best bowler in his family either.
No, not even close.
But
he's probably third to Simon Set.
That's the crazy part. We're going to see a 30 for 30 doc about the Sets bowling one of these days. I'm telling you. Embrace the weekend, people. You could